You are listening to the Bottom Line podcast, where those living with or beyond bowel cancer, as well as health professionals involved in bowel cancer treatment and care, share their inspirational stories and lived experiences with host and bowel cancer survivor, Stephanie.
This episode of the Bottom Line podcast is an absolute cracker, focusing on support and particularly around nutrition. I have heard far too often from patients, I wish I had found Bowel Cancer Australia's support services when I was first diagnosed. In my experience, when you are first diagnosed with cancer, it's just a blur and the immediate priority is having the cancer removed or treated. The long-term side effects and impact on your life generally come much later. For those living with or beyond bowel cancer, the impacts on your day-to-day can severely impact your lifestyle. And Bowel Cancer Australia have been supporting patients and their loved ones for many years with their specialist telehealth support services, uniquely designed for bowel cancer patients. Today's podcast is part one of a three-part series as we chat to the wonderful team at Bowel Cancer Australia about how they can help you. First cab off the rank is our bowel care nutritionist, Jo. She is joined by bowel cancer patient, Jemima. So welcome, Jo and Jemima.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Likewise.
Let's start with you, Jo. Obviously, we're dealing with the bowel, and this can have severe implications. Everyone's unique around what we eat and how we manage that. Can you briefly talk us through about what your role is as a nutritionist?
Absolutely. So as part of the specialist support services team at Bowel Cancer Australia, I speak directly to cancer patients and their families to develop a range of strategies and recommendations around their individual set of symptoms and their individual circumstances to best support their symptoms and improve their quality of life.
And Jemima, you were diagnosed with bowel cancer and you're on the other side of that. Can you briefly summarise your journey and where you're at now?
I was diagnosed with stage 3 rectal cancer in October 2023, and my treatment had several stages, beginning with combined chemotherapy and radiation for 5 weeks. After recovery, then ultra-low anterior resection of the rectum and sigmoid colon and lymph nodes, and the formation of a stoma ileostomy. And then another 4 months of adjuvant chemotherapy. And then after healing, then I went through and had the reversal. So I had the ileostomy bag removed and then had to learn to use a bowel without a rectum or a sigmoid colon. So there was still a lot of learning and still is a lot of learning. But I am now 18 months cancer-free. So that came fairly early in the journey. Actually, after the radiation and chemotherapy, there was complete resolution of the tumour, and the pathology from the resection confirmed that, which was pretty exciting. But I still obviously had the remaining of the treatment to go because I was stage 3 initially. It was in the lymph node. So I still had to complete the adjuvant chemotherapy and have the second surgery.
Well, that's fantastic news. But as you know, obviously, and you've experienced and I have experienced as well, is that although the cancer may no longer be there, you're living with impacts. Some can be less for some people than others, can't they, Jo? How did you help Jemima and how can you help people probably through those stages? Because Jemima's mentioned a number of stages there. There's diagnosis. She had a temporary ileostomy, then she had chemotherapy, and then she had her stoma reversed. And they can all present different issues, can't they?
Absolutely, yes. I think I started speaking to Jemima after her low anterior resection, ultra low anterior resection, and the formation of the ileostomy. And at that point, Jemima was having quite a high output, I believe.
Correct.
And having problems getting some good form to her output. So that's when we started talking and we came up with a few ideas about foods that she should be including to help to bind things, slow it down, and improve her output.
And I think that's what people sometimes think, this must be my new normal. I have to navigate it. But that's not necessarily the case, is it, Jo?
Well, there are quite a few foods that are high in starch that work very well to help slow the transit time through the bowel, and also to give that great form to the stool. So things like potato and rice and sweet potato even are really good foods to try to introduce even quite frequently initially to help to slow things down. Some of the other strategies around these foods as well are having them cooked and cooled, allowing that to happen before their consumption is another way to increase the resistant starch, which is another compound that is also very beneficial for high output patients.
And Jemima, how did that help you?
Yeah, I just pulled up my diary earlier today to have a look, because there were a lot of conversations that Jo and I had in the journey, and her assistance and her knowledge and professionalism, it was immeasurable in the positive effect that it had for me and giving me a plan to move forward. So it's interesting, I've come across pages where Jo and I have set out an actual full day of eating and hydrating. And exactly what Jo said then, I was using green banana flour, that resistant starch, as well as pre-cooked rice that was then refrigerated. Sweet potato was a great one for me too, that was then refrigerated. We also had to have electrolytes because I was losing a lot of fluid with the chemotherapy as well. It was very wet, the output, and I had to drink 30 minutes either side of a meal so it wasn't impacting and flushing it through. So it was a very timed schedule, but Jo was able to help me list that. So I had a program each day when I got up, and I knew exactly what I was doing, and I was hitting the targets that I needed also for things like protein to rebuild muscle strength, as well as nutrition to support the liver, etc. So it's quite, you know, quite in-depth formulation. Without that, there is no way that I would have been able to turn around and begin adjuvant chemo 4.5 weeks after that ultra low anterior section. That was quite an early turnaround to start the chemotherapy, but all my bloods came back and my chemo oncologist was over the moon. She couldn't believe how well everything was looking so quickly. And I know that's because of Jo and the program that I had to get me there.
And that's fantastic news. And I think that's the important factor, is that there is this support service there for you. Jo, do you want to talk about the treatment and the chemo component and the importance of things like protein?
Yeah, well, as Jemima just mentioned, there's several components to the success of these strategies. Obviously, having a very compliant patient helps. And Jemima was excellent and took on all the advice and got the results, which is wonderful. So one of the strategies that I know you got instant results with, Jemima, is the concept of drinking the water away from food.
Big time.
So we find with people with high stoma output that drinking fluid or liquids at the same time as eating does increase the transit time of food through the gut, contributing to that output. So giving that time away from meals allows the food to move slowly and interact with the digestive enzymes. Obviously, we have a reduced capacity now to digest and process food. So we want to give the gut as much time as we can without flushing everything through too quickly with water at the same time. So the water intake, a big one.
Can I just jump in there, Jo? Is that the same for people who don't have a stoma?
It can be very supportive for most people, actually, to just give a little bit of time either side of a meal to not have a huge volume of water at the same time as a meal. Absolutely, yes. Protein is another huge factor through everybody's cancer journey, coming out of surgery, going into chemotherapy, helping support, again, this high stoma output. Protein, as the main structural components of our body, are critical as the building blocks of our body to help support tissue repair following surgery, cellular repair from damaged immune cells. Proteins make up transport pathways, contribute to lean muscle, maintaining lean muscle, provide a very valuable energy source as well. So proteins, yeah, very, really critical to the whole process.
What advice do you have for people? And I don't know whether you experienced this, Jemima, but when I was going through chemo, the thought of eating was not a good, it's something I didn't love doing. I felt nauseous and food just didn't fill me with a lot of joy. What's your suggestion there, Joe?
Well, there's a few. A lot of people try to sort of soldier through treatment without the antiemetics, and I think that's a big one, just to make sure they are included, to make sure that you're not pushing through that low-grade nausea all the time, which becomes an ongoing struggle to maintain appetite and get food in on a regular basis. So that is one strategy. Even having ginger on a regular basis will help support a reduction in nausea and hopefully increase appetite so we can get small volumes of food coming in frequently.
How did you navigate the chemo world with your nutrition, Jemima?
I was relatively fortunate, as Joe just said. Ginger was really my go-to. I think after my first week of chemo with the combined low-grade chemo with the radiation, we stopped on the way because I was feeling nauseous, and I actually just picked up some of the ginger anti-nausea tablets and took those, and couldn't believe it, within about 15 minutes all the nausea was gone. And at the same time, I picked up a box of eucalyptus drops and sucked on one of those, and I was like, wow, lucky me. So ginger played a huge role. And then obviously having the adjuvant chemo later on, which was much stronger than the initial course that I had the ginger ready to go. I had the ginger and lemon tea. I had fresh ginger and lemon in my hot water to take with me. I had mints as well as eucalyptus drops. I had all those little bits and pieces. And for me, I was really fortunate. That was enough to keep the nausea at bay, because as Joe said, it's important to have an appetite. And I knew that I was doing okay when I had a desire to eat. And for me, even as an adult or as a child, my mum knew I wasn't well if I didn't want to eat. So kind of was always in the back of my head. It's the same with my own kids. I know if they've been through an illness, I know they're feeling better when they start looking for food, or like, mum, I'm hungry, what can I eat? So that was it. That kind of rung true for me the whole time. If I feel like eating, then I must be doing okay. But yeah, for me, ginger every single day, and I still take it now. I still take it twice a day now. So, and have ginger and lemon in my water at this point, still navigating this new bowel that I have, because I want to feed my body and feed it well.
Joe, you mentioned about compliance, and obviously everyone's unique. Everyone has different situations, but it's like anything, you get what you put in often, isn't it?
That's exactly right. So, amongst the nutritionists at Bowel Cancer Australia, I think we've developed some excellent strategies to help combat a whole range of stages through treatment and surgery. And we've seen the success of these individual recommendations. So often it does take a bit to convince people. Even switching to a low fiber diet can be counterintuitive for a lot of people because they've been used to high fiber being part of a healthy diet. And sometimes a low fiber diet is necessary post-surgery with a stoma at various stages. It's a critical part of the process because it is easy to process. The bowel doesn't have to work too hard. It doesn't add a lot of bulk. So the fiber components are very bulking, which is often a hazard for people with a stoma, for example. So yeah, having good compliance is important.
And you talk about fiber, and we're told so often, have a healthy bowel, eat lots of fiber. So it's hard to change that mentality. At what point can you reintroduce fiber? And that's a very big if because everyone's so very different.
That's right. So again, depending on what stage of treatment people are at. So Jemima, we spoke following her ileostomy reversal. So the fiber again plays a big role here initially. That is a low fiber diet. The bowel takes some time to wake up again following a reversal. It's been out of action. It loses muscle tone. It does take some time to get used to food again. And initially, low fiber makes a lot of sense. So depending on how well the bowel is functioning, we're looking very closely at the bowel motions, at the frequency, at the consistency, and that's the big gauge of when we start to introduce more fiber to the diet. Obviously, the aim is always to get people back to a high fiber diet that is really varied with lots of plant foods, and this can take time. This can take a lot of time, and introducing the right sorts of fibers at the right time is also critical. So soluble fibers would be the first thing to introduce.
And what are they, Joe? What are soluble fibers?
Things like oats are always a really good introduction. That's one of my go-tos, actually. Soaked rolled oats are a critical part of the reversal process because they contain high resistance starch, which is excellent. They're partially broken down as well, so they're very easy to digest, but the soluble fiber and the high resistance starch helps to add really good form to the stool and provides the right fuel that we need to get good consistency, reduce frequency. It forms the basis of a lot of that reversal process.
I know for me, Jemima, it took not months, it took years for my bowel to get back to a sense of normal. How has it been for you?
Yeah, and I'm not completely there yet either. So, what are we, a year, 2, 3 months afterwards?
Well, and I'm substantially ahead of you.
I know there's still room for improvement and slow steps, and that Joe really emphasized that in the beginning. So even for me, starting on the oats, it was really just starting with maybe 2 tablespoons of soaked cooked oats at a time. But funnily enough, that's what I had for brunch today, was oats soaked overnight and cooked, because it gives me that sustenance. I can have it with some lactose-free Greek yogurt, so I can get some protein. I even put my collagen powder in it now. All these wonderful tips and tricks that Joe gave me, I'm still using now, and I'm still building on that each and every day. So I really think it'll probably be another good 9, 12 months until I feel like I'm where I need to be with, the whole diet. Yeah.
And you may not get back to where you once were. I think that's the other thing, isn't it, Joe? You've got to be realistic.
It's the new normal for people. So adjusting people's expectations is a huge part of our conversations. So often people will say, when will it go back to normal? When will it be like before? And it won't be. So yes, you've had major surgery and it won't ever be the same, but we work on regaining control and having the best bowel function possible with what we have available to us.
Talking about that and control, I know in the first probably 6 months for me, it was that urgency and needing to know where the toilet was. Jemima, have you experienced that? And then how have you navigated that? And then Joe, I'll ask you what your thoughts are around that.
Very much for me, the urgency, and it could vary from day to day. It wasn't necessarily always the same. Even if I was pretty much eating the same meals at the same times, depending how much sleep I'd had or how busy, or if I was stressed about something, of course, that can set your bowel in motion. For me, it was a challenge, and I also stumbled across this fabulous page in my diary, where I've pretty much written everything for about 2 weeks, the exact food I ate, what time, the bowel habits, et cetera, so I could learn a pattern, and I shift and move my meal times to accommodate me getting out of the house with confidence, knowing that I wasn't going to have to look for a toilet urgently. So for me, it was all about preparation, and that planning and preparation and getting to know my body. But you can see, ladies, you can see this is what it looked like. I mean, it's all hieroglyphics, but it's ex that having the confidence to step out, because I knew how my body was going to respond to food, or knew how many hours I had before I needed to go to the toilet, was huge in my recovery mentally as well. as well as physically. Yeah.
And Joe, I've known people who have had a reversal and then gone back to a bag because they just can't, can't go and pick up the kids, for example. Your thoughts around this and thoughts around a diary?
Well, the diary is a really valuable tool, which Jemima's obviously found, because it does help to identify trigger foods and the foods to avoid. And it can paint a really clear picture and give you the confidence to know what to eat and when to eat it. And yes, there are still some patients that we can't get great success with. And obviously that comes down to, the amount of rectum and the amount of surgery. What's happened, what damage is done, there might just not be enough capacity to regain control. And those things are obviously out of our control. But there are certainly, a lot of strategies that we can adopt to help improve symptoms.
Again, we come back to every person's unique and every surgery is unique, isn't it?
That's right.
Jemima, you've recently been on a plane. You went to Bali. You and I had a conversation about this the other day. And I was always a little bit fearful of going to, say, somewhere like Bali because lots of chili, etc. How did you navigate that? And do you think this was possible, had you not had the guidance from Joe?
So Bali was amazing. We've just been. So that was a year after my reversal, but I actually went to Bali November last year with my husband and kids. So that was 11 weeks after the reversal. And that was only possible because of Joe's advice and the use of the diary and really learning about my body before I went, because there's no way I would have had the confidence to do that. But in those early stages, for me to fly, I did have to fast, but I also had to fast properly, which meant I was still getting sustenance through bone broth and electrolytes, etc. So I was still looking after my body nutritionally to get there with the confidence, because I didn't have the same control that I did now. This time, just been very different. Was able to eat before, we left and flew there, and no issues. I definitely do not have chili.
No.
And I'm okay to give that up. I also, take my probiotics and make sure, you wash your hands and you drink the, bottled water, etc.
Well, even if you don't have a bowel issue, Bali can be touch and go.
That's exactly right. People looked at me and said, "I can't believe you would go there." But we've been there, 8 times, and I've never had an issue with bowel problems, a reaction Bali belly, because I've done the right thing. So that I knew I could control. It was just about managing my new bowel. But, starchy rice, I mean, it's everywhere. You can have it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I just continued to eat the way that Joe had helped guide me. So, and I still do that now. So that wasn't a problem for me at all.
Joe, your tips for people who want to travel, because it is a common theme. I'm worried I'm going to be on a plane for 30, up to 13, 14 hours. And at the best of times, and also, being altitude, it can create gas for any normal human. Your guidance?
Well, planning ahead is a huge part of any travel process. So knowing what access to food that you have, how frequently you need to be eating definitely plays a big role. So like Jemima explained, she knew that she was going to have great access to those perfect starchy foods, simple proteins, and she'd done the trip before, so she also knew the basic precautions of traveling in Bali to stay away from, of course, spicy food, be cautious around water, etc. So some of those simple strategies apply to anybody that's attempting to travel following surgery. Having a little bit of loperamide on hand might also be advisable. So, GastroStop or Imodium, even some Saccharomyces boulardii, which is SB, like a form of a probiotic that can help support traveler's diarrhea, would be another advisable supplement to have on hand. But certainly having access and information to the food that's going to be available to you at your destination is really important.
Yes, and we just because we've had bowel cancer and there are impacts, you still want to enjoy life and have a decent lifestyle, don't you, Jemima?
Absolutely. And that those pieces, the SB Fluoractive and ginger tablets and the GastroStop were in every single bag that I had that I took with me to Bali. So yes, thank you, Joe. They're essential.
Christmas, festive time, obviously, is coming up. That's another area, areas of celebration. What advice have you got for people around that and also around alcohol consumption? We know we shouldn't drink, massive amounts of alcohol, but how does that impact the bowel?
Well, again, depending on what stage of treatment you are at and what effect alcohol will have. So, if there's a stoma involved, carbonated drinks are tricky. Even after following a reversal, carbonated drinks are tricky, and they're often the celebratory drinks are carbonated in some way. So, be cautious around those, I would definitely say. Alcohol, full stop, can have some impacts and speed up transit time and contribute to symptoms. So maybe include it after a meal or include a lot of those binding starchy foods that might help absorb it. And certainly just be mindful around the volume that you're having.
And food-wise, festive season, there can be lots of nuts and things that perhaps are outside, rich foods that you would not normally eat. What's your guidance around that?
Again, be mindful of your triggers and the things that you know upset your bowel. And yes, there can be a lot of the Christmas foods do fall into all of those categories. So keep it simple. Focus on protein, things like a beautiful whole steamed fish with some ginger and shallot would be a great addition for most people that have at any stage of treatment. I've just put up on the website also a baked ricotta cheesecake. So really simple, high in protein with the ricotta, has eggs in it as well. So yeah, really high in protein, a simple dish that's super tasty that you can add a few different things to according to what is you are tolerating at the time.
A lovely base dessert.
That's right.
Jemima, how do you navigate celebratory moments? We caught up recently at an event and, we both had a glass of bubbles. How do you cope?
I will either have one drink or no drinks, and that drink is sipped on like over a long period of time because it does increase my bowel motility. So I'm very aware of that. And if I'm going to enjoy a glass of bubbles or a glass of red wine, I'll make sure that I've had something to eat prior. So the go-to, I think that day, I think I might have had a little bit of sushi, maybe about 3 hours before I left. So that I knew that I had that in my stomach, just in case if the food there wasn't appropriate, it didn't matter. But I will navigate. I will always go to safe foods. I think I'll enjoy something else to eat when I get home if what here isn't appropriate, because I'd rather enjoy the social company than the food.
I think that's a big takeaway at this time of year with lots of events to maybe eat before you go. So have your safe foods before you go so that you're not starving hungry when you get there and be tempted to have the wrong things, which can be really problematic.
That's wonderful advice. Joe, any other tips before we get to my three quick summarized points?
No, well, we actually haven't touched on one of the other strategies that we adopted for Jemima following her reversal, the ginger tablets. So we talked about ginger to help with nausea, but ginger is also excellent for people with LARS symptoms, so low anterior resection syndrome. It's very supportive here. And what we quite often see with these patients is what we call clustering, which is a lot of frequency and a lot of opening the bowels many times, multiple times in a short period of time, or at least the need or the sensation to want to go. So this spasming sensation that happens in these patients is a real frustration and a very significant hindrance to people's quality of life. Ginger is very good at helping to reduce this spasming sensation. So it's a natural antispasmodic. So it's very good for that exact purpose. And as Jemima said, she's still using ginger capsules today, which is excellent.
And Jemima, is there anything now that you feel you can't do because of your new normal?
No, as long as I've got time to plan. I obviously can't be as spontaneous as I would like to be, especially if it's a big event or, I'm going to be out for 5 hours or I haven't got control of food or et cetera. But as long as I have time to plan, absolutely. I just went to a girlfriend's 50th birthday last weekend and, that was probably 6 hours of fun and dancing and, celebrating and I'm planning on going camping and hiking in 10 days with my youngest daughter. And, we went snorkeling in Bali. Like, as long as you know your body and you do, focus on that and get a really good understanding, you can do whatever you like.
It's obviously been quite empowering. How has Jo overall, how would you summarize how she's helped you navigate your diagnosis and subsequent side effects?
You just gave me goosebumps then. Thank you, Joe. Without Joe's advice, I wouldn't have been able to do what I have done in the last 12 to 14 months, without a doubt. That also included me returning to work, hosting our daughter's 18th birthday party, as well as traveling to Bali with the family and my husband. I've traveled interstate 4 times for different reasons. Yeah, really, if I didn't have that professional guidance, I wouldn't have been able to achieve that. But the biggest thing that I would say for other patients is that you have to trust. So I completely trusted Jo's expertise and her advice because she's a nutritionist who works at Bowel Cancer Australia. So I knew whatever she said was tried and tested. And that just gave me the confidence to jump straight in. And of course, the results started showing sometimes immediately. Already had a great response. So why wouldn't you continue to work with that? So thank you, Joe. I really, really so grateful for all of that advice.
My absolute pleasure. It's very rewarding to hear that you've had such a significant impact on people's life. So I'm very, very happy that you've had such a good result, and it's been my pleasure to help you through every stage of it.
Thank you.
That is such a lovely segue, and that is the help that Bowel Cancer Australia and the telehealth support services can give, which is so fabulous. And what's more, it's free. I'm going to give us a little plug there, but they're absolute superheroes. To sum up and wrap the podcast up, I'm going to ask you both three quick points you'd like people to take away from today's podcast. I'm going to throw to you first, Jemima, and then finish with you, Joe.
So, three things to take away. One, utilize Bowel Cancer Australia's services. Two, trust in their advice. And three, believe in yourself and you will get the best results that you possibly can.
Fantastic. And Joe?
Yeah, look, I think the big takeaways are certainly that we work with everybody's individual capabilities, everybody's individual symptoms, and everybody is treated on their own set of circumstances. So please, yeah, reach out, ask for help. Even for the people that feel like they have it well under control, there's often small areas that they have not considered at different stages through treatment. So that's what we're here for. We're very good at what we do, and we're very happy to be of support to people.
Fantastic, ladies. Thank you so much for both sharing your wisdom, your lived experience, Jemima, and guiding us today on the Bottom Line podcast. I know it will be a fantastic resource for people who are navigating life during bowel cancer diagnosis or post. So thank you for joining me, Jo and Jemima.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Steph.
Thank you so much for listening to the Bottom Line podcast. To find out more about bowel cancer or for support or simply to donate, please go to bowelcanceraustralia.org.